Just a little more time is all we're asking for. Just a little more time could open closing doors. Just a little uncertainty can bring it down. Nobody wants to show you how. So if you're locked on your own, you can never surrender. And if your life won't lead you home, you can never surrender. And when the night is cold and dark.
Good evening, and welcome to our 26th episode of the Never Give Up Show. I am Bailey Smith, your host. I will first give out our phone number, 516-531-9643. We'd love to hear from you tonight, or I hope you get to listen on blogtalkradio.com/friendstalk. And you click on the Never Give Up Show. I also will upload this to SoundCloud this evening. As you guys all know, every show that I do is very personal to me in some way or another. I relate in some way or another. And tonight's show is very emotional. Young woman that has agreed to come on the show tonight has so much strength. I watch her posts on social media, and she is unbelievable. And I actually contacted her and said, please, can you be on my show? And there's always reminders to things that I so much relate to, and so many of you, of my listeners and my my show family and my support group family can relate to this woman's story and what she's going through. So I may get a little emotional, so bear with me, but I would like to introduce Chelsea Curtis. Chelsea is a stay-at-home mom for 17 years, or she was a stay-at-home mom for 17 years. She now owns a metaphysical shop with her uncle, and she works on missing persons homicide cases. She was trained by LA Special Forces investigator. She does home cleansing and investigations with a paranormal team, as well as readings. She's currently in school to receive her alchemist certification, which is hypnotherapy. She also has Reiki certifications. Recently, she lost custody of her 14-year-old daughter. She was 13 on October 1, 2020, to her father, who has sexually molested her and has been absent for most of her life, basically. 7 years. On October 1st, in her custody hearing, the judge, in less than 15 minutes, gave this man custody without even giving her reason why. She is now working with a PR and protective parents on how to bring more awareness about the corruption in the family courtroom. She's also working towards making a change to save all of our children, as we all are. I want to read something she posted the other day on Instagram that really touched me, because it just is so close to home. She wrote, this was a memory. Sorry, it was on Facebook. She posted it on Instagram. This was a memory today on Facebook from last year in August. This was at the very beginning of our court process. I had already gone to court. I already got the court papers of what the abuser was wanting, which was sole custody of my daughter. On this day, I remember watching my kids playing together in the Yuba River, thinking there is no way a judge would take Shay away from this and put her with an abuser, a man with whom was in and out of her life from 3 to 7, then gone for nearly 7 years straight after that. No phone calls, nothing. No birthday calls, nothing. Maybe it was my ego that got in the way on October 1, 2020, when we went into court. I really thought the judge would be protecting my daughter, especially after telling them, him and the minors, the couple, I don't know, it's cut off, how he has sexually abused her, and after me expressing that he has been gone from her life nearly 7 years. He has no contact with his other children, and in less than 15 minutes, her daughter was handed over to her abuser. I sobbed and sobbed, and I still am. A protective parent trying to protect my daughter. A parent, a healthy mom that has carried her child for 9 months. Well, no matter what, whether you're healthy or not, but a mother that carries her child for 9 months, that child is a piece of you. It is physically a piece of you. It is cut to be taken out of you, okay? So that child is like a limb. And when a healthy parent loses their child at whatever age, whether it's taken because they are, God forbid, murdered, or whether they are taken even as a young adult, like my oldest, and brainwashed against you, there is no worse pain in the world than your child not being with you or talking to you or you seeing them. So I know so many of you out there that are listening or that will call in that relate to this woman. And we are going to help fight to bring this Shay home and for justice, because this has to end. We are just creating a horrific, another vicious cycle of abuse. And it has to end now. And I will give out our number one more time, 516-531-9643. I'm going to bring Chelsea Curtis on. And welcome. Welcome, Chelsea.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on. I hope I didn't speak too much, but I want to give you as much time as possible. So share with us, you know, from whatever point that you're up, you know, you want to talk from, you know, go back to some of the stuff I talked about. Or, you know, it's 2 hours, it's your show. Hopefully we'll have some callers call in. I know that I have so many people, such a huge support family on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and that so many of them that relate to you. So, you know, we get it to some degree. That pain, we all have pain. We all have a trauma. We all have a pain that is the same in some way or another. So we're here to listen.
Yeah.
And the mic is yours.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm a young mom. I got pregnant at 16, and I had my first baby when I was 17. You know, I dropped out of school. I didn't finish my senior year because I just wanted to be a mom and take care of my kids. I had Shaylin, my daughter, basically a day and a half before my 21st birthday. Wow. Again, I was a stay-at-home mom after having her. We moved to Arizona when she was about 2 years old, and I got pregnant with my third kid, and all these are with the abuser. you know, I carried him, I carried her, and I carried my first. And when our third child was born, about 3 months old, we decided to split up. And by this time, Shaylin was about three. And we moved back to California, Napa. And we were living in a camping trailer because that's all we had. It was my grandparents let us live in the camping trailer. One night after the fairgrounds, going to the fair, I was in the camping trailer showering, and he decided to leave. So he left me being a stay-at-home mom from the age of 17 to, what, nearly 23, 24, in a camping trailer with the three kids. And I pretty much had, I thought I was going to die because I just didn't know, you know, he was the main provider. So what I'm getting at is from that day on, me and my three kids have really grown to this bigger bond, a bigger bond for me at least, because we were all each other had. And, you know, the father very rarely showed up for his every other weekend visit. There were times where I went to court and asked for him not to see the kids because he got into drugs heavily and would not show up for the kids. And that's pretty traumatizing for them to experience. And it always killed me because my kids would be waiting for their dad to show up and crying because we were going back home and dad never showed up. During this time, I remember my oldest, who's about 3 years older than Shaylin, he would always come home from the dad's house upset because why does Shaylin always get to sleep in the bed with dad? The baby was still in like a pack and play, but he would always have to sleep on the floor. And I thought it was really strange because why only her in the bed and not all the kids if, you know, if the boy's obviously wanting to, you know, not wanting to sleep on the floor. So that was like the first sign of like, what's going on, you know? So when she was 3 to 7, he was in and out, hardly showing up. Again, she disclosed her first abuse with him touching her when she was 4. I was a single mom in an apartment, and I was bathing her, and I had stepped out for a second to check on the baby, and I caught her doing some things that a 4-year-old should not know how to do. At this time, we did have the kids into therapy because I thought it was the right thing with us separating and them not understanding, you know, why dad's not coming. And anyway, I had the therapist cell number, and I had called her to ask her, what do I do? What do I say? You know, what my daughter had told me her father did. Because I asked my daughter why she was in the bath, you know, where did you learn that? And she very clearly said, dad, you know, touched me here and put his private there. And the therapist told me to not panic, to just let her talk. And so I followed the therapist's instructions, and I went to court and asked for a restraining order, which I did get granted. I did make a police report, and she had a forensic interview. And she did not even state her name. She was too uncomfortable to even state her name. So they, DA didn't push the crimes. They didn't push it because she couldn't even talk. And then again, so after that, the temporary restraining order got lifted because the dad said, oh, you know, this isn't true. You know, I want to be a part of my kid's life. And so the court lifted the restraining order and gave him back visitations. This whole time, I've always had custody of my kids. I still have custody of my kids, except for Shaylin. So he would, you know, get his weekend, but still, again, hardly showing up. The last time she saw her dad when she was 7, she came home from his place. He dropped them off, and she was just completely upset. My youngest was upset. Everybody was upset. And she, again, said what the dad did to her in the bathroom, except she wasn't four now. She was now seven. And I always thought it was weird because he would always bathe her when he would return her home. And the other kids weren't bathed. And my daughter would be, say, Daddy would bathe me when I wouldn't bathe her here at my home, meaning me physically, you know, I would give her the washcloth and put soap on it and let her wash her mm-hmm. body, and I would just assist with the hair. But no, mm-hmm. Daddy would wash her up. I always thought that was very strange. So finally, this when she was seven, she came home and told us again what Daddy did to her in the bathroom. At seven, again, did the same protocol, filed for two to do the forensic interview, and she wouldn't say anything. So again, the DA never pushed it, which is just mind-blowing to me.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, he never came around, nothing. For a little over 6 years, up until June last year, where my daughter reached out to him reach out to him. And that's what started this whole new situation that I'm in. So he was gone for, you know, over 6 years, never once called, never sent birthday cards. I had no forwarding address. I had no idea where he moved to. I assumed he went back to Arizona, but he never reached out to contact his kids, and I still live in the same house that I did last time he saw them. I still have the same phone number, and so there's no excuses in that aspect, like why he couldn't contact his children.
Mm-hmm. Wow. They actually made your daughter at such a young age go and speak in front of people?
Yeah, they did I think it's called a forensic interview, where basically they take her into a room with strangers and just kind of interview her, you know, show her some pictures from what I can remember them telling me. And depending on what she can disclose at that time is either when they would send it, like let the police know, yes, go ahead and tell the DAs, or they have to tell the DAs what the forensic report says. So the DA did not push it because Shaylin did not speak either time.
Well, normally they would bring, don't they bring a child psychologist, a social worker for the child, and speak to them, you know, on a child's level? Wouldn't they have someone in the room with your daughter because she was so young?
I think they did have a social worker that was there in the room with her, but nobody she knew, like nobody she was familiar with. Talking to her therapist, you know, about it to see if they can, what they say or anything, you know, as far as my daughter knew, these were just strangers. And, you know, she was just traumatized by the man that she thought she can trust, which is her father. You know, hell, I wouldn't open up to a bunch of strangers either. My heart broke for her because I'm like, this isn't going to work. And I think that's another big problem that we face as, you know, protective parents, especially when, you know, there's sexual abuse and stuff, is I don't think these interviews are properly fitted for, you know, children.
Mm-hmm. Definitely not. There's no question in my mind that this is not okay. I mean, she's a baby, and there has to be an adult there, a familiar adult. They wouldn't allow you in?
And they would not allow me to talk to her because they didn't want me to basically, you know, try to switch the words where I'm programming stuff in her head. And I was just thinking about this the other day. I'm thinking, well, if you are a parent, you would think you would need to talk to your children. Like, you need to talk to these guys. They're going to, you know, let them know what happened. But they wouldn't even let me say that. They gave me, you know, said, no, do not mention any of this to her. Do not even tell her we're coming here. They just wanted it completely what they thought was authentic, but it wasn't.
Wow, that's insane. Right there, you have, right there is a red flag.
Right.
Because a little girl is not going to talk about something in front of strangers that, you know, and then, I mean, there's too much of this. I've never heard of, you know, not having the right kind of people to sit and talk to her, especially sit in the back of the room and just, you know, assure her that everything's okay, that it's safe to talk, or, you know.
Yeah, no, I was in a waiting room area where they had like that double, that mirror where it looks like a mirror, but you can see in, but they can't see out to see who's watching.
Right.
So I could see in the window to her talking with this person, but she, you know, I think would probably have been more comfortable for somebody at 4 and at 7 to have their mom at least holding their hand, or, you know, just give them that, you know, safety of that it's okay.
100%. I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah. And even...
Go on.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
7. Well, when Shaylin was 4 and I was still in my apartment, I met my husband, my current husband now, when she was like 5 and a half, 6. But when 4 years old, because she's had behavioral issues, at 4 is when I would always say I noticed such a big drastic change in Shaylin's behavior. Like, she was hoarding food, and it was just the randomest thing. And in the living room, she would throw all this food, you know, like banana peels, just random weird stuff behind the TV, because I had it catty cornered, so there was a big space behind the TV, punching holes in the wall, acting extremely aggressive towards her older brother and younger brother. And I'm like, what is happening? I've never experienced this. Obviously, I'm young and she's my second child. But that was the turning point of where her behavior started becoming different. And again, that's exactly at the same time that she disclosed the abuse that the father did to her. So this carried, this behavior carried up until she was, I don't know, 10, 11 years old, just this drastic behavior. So I, of course, got her help, got her therapy. Therapist did, I have it right here. I'm looking at a psychological evaluation when she was 8 years old. Did very, thoroughly tested her for many, many things, because a lot of her diagnosis, which were ADHD, dysregulated mood disorder, PTSD, what was the other one? You know, this is just a handful of diagnoses. And she was so young, so it was really hard for anybody to really diagnose her besides the ADHD one. So the school and her therapist that we were working with which is the county, wanted her to have a psychological evaluation done. So she did. She was 8 years old. And in this report, it states many, many, many times of my daughter going into details of what the father did, and even explaining why my daughter's drastic behavior is the way it is because this is like a mirroring effect to the abuse he did on her. And I had took this to the police. I took this to CPS. I took it to the court just, you know, this last year and even recently. And they can't even use this as freaking proof. It's just, again.
Why not?
They said they can't because because it's been so long. It's been so long because, you know, in some of my stories, you know, I state that how my daughter told the courtroom that he molested her. She told the hospital staff he molested her. And my daughter has been asking to speak up this last year about this abuse. And again, they go back to the DA's report of not pushing it through. Therefore, they're not even willing to look at all this other evidence, including my, you know, daughter. She was 13 at that time, to listen to her, to, you know, push charges on this guy. Instead, they forced her back to live with him instead of taking, like, this evidence and her own voice to actually do something.
Wow, it's. I mean, you hear way too much of this, and you know, the corruption. Are there other stories where you live that you've heard that things are like this are happening in that specific courtroom?
Yeah, there's a few other parents, not as drastic as mine. They still have visitation with their kids. Or the courts are forcing them to have the abuser to have visitation. But the two parents that I'm thinking of, they still have somewhat custody of their kids.
And you and there's no way you can ask this judge to recuse themselves and start from all over? Because there there is a statute of limitations. When it comes to this, and is it over?
Not that, well, the judge wouldn't give me a new date. He didn't want to continue to push the court date, so he was not going to put any more court hearings. And then when I had went to or called self-help center just to ask about how I could go about of getting a new judge on my case, he said, well, you can do that. However, the new judge might look down upon that and look very, what did he say, like unfavorable, because basically the new judge would think I didn't like or respect the old judge's rulings. So now I'm trying to be spiteful and get a new judge, which I thought was complete crap. So I feel kind of like, really, like, what am I supposed to do if I get a new judge?
If you have nothing to lose, and you have the right information and the right support system now, then you know more now. What do you have to lose?
That's true. Yeah, I do have a friend that's helping me. I just got a call actually today saying that my thumb drive is ready, so I can look at it in fine detail every single court thing from the beginning, which goes back to 2010 until this recent one, with a fine comb, so I can actually see exactly, you know, and build a case with that, with the different rulings and stuff.
And it sounds like you're doing, which is incredible. Just from your own personal experience, you got this training. How did you get involved in that? That is like incredible.
The hypnotherapy?
No, the homicide training that you're doing, is that because of your uncle?
Yeah, well, yeah, we had actually a missing person go missing here in where I live. And he knew about, you know, the gifts of me being able to talk to spirit and seeing spirit. And he had asked me, we were sitting at Chevy's at lunch one day. He said, do you think you could see if you can talk to maybe missing persons? And so I started, you know, going into that. And I said, well, why not? And one of the ads just popped up on, you know, like, I think it was Facebook, how random ads just pop up. And it was for this class down in LA to be trained by the LA PD and another medium that does these kind of cases. So I just really took that as a sign and opportunity to do it. But again, like how long kind of situations with our children, they're just the same with dealing with missing person cases and homicide cases. The one missing person that that got me into this, his body was found not a couple months ago in one of the locations that I was trying to tell the police to go check out, but they didn't want to go do it because I'm a medium. And actually the boyfriend of this missing person is actually a sheriff down for San Francisco. So there's a lot of corruption within the family court, within the law enforcement. You know, at one point I was getting kind of scared for my own family because I'm thinking this sheriff knows that I am looking for this guy. You know, so that's kind of how I got into it. And given the experience I had with trying to give, you know, suggest evidence, suggest the locations, how I was treated there, it just kind of really put me back, you know, like, well, geez, you know, I don't know. So I kind of backed away from it, but I wanted to get back into it. But now I'm dealing with my daughter's stuff. So that's kind of been a pause.
Now, you know, is it even legal to just hand one child over and give no reasoning and no why? Is that even legal?
Not to my knowledge, and I thought this judge's words said, I know you've tried, but it's time for the father now to try. Those were his words and his, quote, reasoning for taking my daughter away from me. There was no other reasons. The only reasons that they feel that I should not have my daughter is because I got her treatment in the mental health. You know, she was in hospitals, behavioral hospitals, which I never paid for. You know, these are hospitals that either, A, the police put on a 5150 hold
right.
because she was either trying
right.
to harm herself
right.
or others,
right.
Or the therapist. I never was like, I need her to go because I can't handle her. No, she needed help. And one of my main
right.
things was they would keep her for like 2 weeks, start her on a new medication, and send her away.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this isn't
I know.
Doing anything, you know?
It's very sad.
So my request, which this is what the abuser said, that I wanted her in a longer treatment, which, yes, I did. I wanted them to stop putting medication into her and give her really intense therapy that if she was triggered by this abuse, because every time we would talk about it, it would trigger her into this manic, either she needed to hurt herself or she would go after her brothers with like knives and stuff. And to just create a safe place so she can work through this and she's safe and we're safe. That was always what I was saying. It was not because I didn't want my daughter. But that is why I lost my child, was because of getting her the mental health treatment that she needed.
That's insane.
It is. And in Arizona, she goes to intensive therapy 4 days a week for hours at a time. So it's not like just because she's not in a hospital setting, you know, she's still receiving treatment, reunification treatment.
So she is getting treatment where she is with her father.
That's what they say, yeah.
Uh-huh. And they won't let you speak with her whatsoever?
Nope. They ordered no in-person visits, which I'm in California, she's in Arizona, which I believe is like we're 12 hours away driving. But yeah, no in-person and supervised visits. Or no, I'm sorry, no supervised Zoom calls, sorry.
So in almost a year, you've had no contact with her?
Well, she came in December 2020 for Christmas vacation, and that's when she disclosed she did not want to go back. She disclosed why, that she remembers what her dad did to her because, you know, the therapist explained to me that these kids bottle down these things, and, you know, so she was triggered by seeing him, which she wanted to see him. So in December, she disclosed she didn't want to go back. She said she's not going back. So from December to January 31st, that was what she was doing. And that's what I, some of the things I have shared, like her voice messages that she sent to me to send to him, her emails, her own words that she refused to go back. January 6th, she even told the court that he molested me. And if I have to go back to him, I will kill myself. Which on January 31st, that's what she did. She tried to kill herself. She overdosed on, she took like 30 ibuprofen and called the cops.
She was with you at the time?
Yes. Yeah, she was with me. I had no idea that she was in the bathroom, and that's what happened because she was in the bathroom. The police show up at my door and she's crying and I thought she was just in the bathroom. She called the police on her cell phone. And they put her on a 5150 hold and took her to the hospital.
Right. That's correct.
I didn't. So, since I didn't have custody, they basically locked her in. So she spent from January 31st all the way up until like the first week of March in hospitals. And the reason they kept her so long is because she still wanted to kill herself if she goes back to the father. If she goes back to the father. And during these hospital stays, she was not allowed to call me. The father said she cannot talk to her mom. So it wasn't like she was being influenced by me. She was legitimately fighting for her life, not wanting to go back. And still, on the March 23rd, 2021 court hearing, just a hearing that they put on the calendar just to make sure my daughter was back with her abuser, did not see any concern that Shaylin spent, what, nearly a month and a half trying to not go back to him, even trying to kill herself.
Wow. And she, so when she's in this, is it a PHP or IOP facility that she's in right now?
It's just like an, I think, outpatient therapy.
Outpatient.
It's
so
called.
It's IOP. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So she lives with him and they're not disclosing anything. Like, can you subpoena from them? Because she's a minor. I mean, can you subpoena documentation and request it in court?
When I had asked on the last hearing, why can't I talk to her therapist? And I'll have to listen back because I actually have the transcripts and I recorded it. I have to listen back exactly what their excuse was, why I can't talk to the therapist. But that was one of the other things that I wanted to try to do was see, because they're acting like I'm completely stripped of all my rights of my daughter, which that has not happened.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure
but
out.
But he's the legal guardian. He's considered legal guardian. So as legal guardian, he can stop you, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Time. She's going to high school this year, her first year of high school. But last year I tried to call the school after, right before summer break, just to talk to the school counselor to have her check in with my daughter. And I gave her a little bit of, you know, information of what happened, you know, about her not being there and not wanting to be at the dad. So I think like a week later or something, I end up getting a restraining order on me. So I cannot call my daughter's school. So I've been really hesitant because I'm traumatized and I'm sure many people relate. I am, you know, even looking at these, I was briefly scanning through these transcripts, which I haven't even read. Today's the first day. I mean, I just got them, but not that long ago, but just reading them, I'm like shaking in my body. Like it's horrible. Mm.
I know. I have three plus years of police reports. And I started writing a book. I actually had to hire a
ghostwriter because it's too much and it's painful because you read through things mm-hmm. that happen and you can't believe the corruption and the lack of training and the lack of investigating. It's like unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my latest saying is, I want Bailey's Law now, not when I'm dead. We want Shay's Law now, not God forbid. God forbid, God forbid. You know?
Right.
Because, you know, all these laws that are coming out are because people were murdered. And
exactly.
All the signs were there. They were fighting. They were begging. Or, unfortunately, sometimes they kept quiet because, you know, or they started to fight and they got scared, you know. And the laws, I mean, they're slowly changing. They have to be implemented. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
and that's the whole thing.
And you know, when you throw it in a DA's face or a police's face and say, look, hey, this is the law. Put it to use.
Right.
You know, I had threatened the police. I said, wait till I write a book. And this was years ago. I said, I am going to write every single one of your names in there. And I'm going to stick
yep.
to my thing. I mean, I may not write their exact names. I may use part of their name or the precinct. But, you know, because it's not totally a memoir. It's not really a memoir. It's a story. It's my story plus. But, you know, you have to be the voice. Your child is, unfortunately, doesn't have a voice. And, you know, the fact that she is in IOP, okay, which is partial hospitalization, it's outpatient therapy, it's a few hours every
mm-hmm.
single day, shows there is trauma. Now, God forbid she's being brainwashed by her dad. We don't know, right? Things could be twisted.
As far as I know, she is.
She is. So things
yeah.
are being twisted. And she's so young. So now is the time to get the truth out there, you know. And she hasn't tried to reach you through someone's cell phone or anything?
No, she was allowed to call me twice, basically to chew my ass out because of me posting and sharing stuff. So she was allowed to do that, but she wasn't allowed to call me the day she graduated, you know, middle school. She wasn't allowed to call me, you know, I mean, many times, but they allow her to call me as long as it's going to be a negative and, you know, hurtful conversation towards me.
So she's getting all this help on false stuff.
Yep. No, it doesn't. It doesn't make any sense. And, you know, the court order is that she has to have supervised conversations with me, but that does not include her other family members who they won't even let her talk to. They won't let her talk to her older brother because the older brother, who's 17, put the father, when this all unfolded back June of last year, when the father was back in the picture or came back in the picture, my oldest tried to talk to him. And the father tried to persuade my son to feel and think differently, and my son wasn't having that. He remembers exactly what his dad did. So that was like the last time he talked to him because he doesn't want to face the truth, and that's exactly what my oldest was giving him. And our youngest, who is 11 now, doesn't even know who he is. You know, he knows his stepdad as dad because he came in the picture, you know, when he was like 2.5. But yeah, it's just, she won't,
so
she, he doesn't allow her to talk to anybody.
So you are a safe mom for your boy,
right.
But you're not a safe mom for your daughter.
Exactly.
That's so twisted.
Yeah.
That is so twisted.
And my three other kids, you know?
Oh, you have three more.
Yeah, I have a total of 6 kids, and I have 50,
wow.
And I have no open GPS cases. I mean, I'm not investigated. I mean, nothing. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I mean, hell, I don't even, you know, my only addiction is coffee.
Right.
But no, I have all my kids, and this is what just is the worst ever. Like, I couldn't imagine if, you know, with some moms that have lost all their kids altogether, I couldn't imagine. It makes it,
it's horrible.
Yeah.
There are.
It's so hard for me to even parent my kids in this state, because everything that I believed in, as far as being protected and my kids being protected and me doing what I feel as a mom was right, is completely out the window. Even though I know I was right and everything, but I mean, this is just, I don't know, it's haunting.
I'm sure it has to be. I mean, it's horrible. I mean, knowing that your child, who's a piece of you, is with not just your abuser, but her abuser.
Mm-hmm.
You know, has he remarried or moved on in any way?
Yeah, he remarried, and they have 5 children together living in his father's house, and has lived in his father's house since he moved back to Arizona when, you know, my daughter was 7 years old. Yeah, so he's remarried, and they have 5 kids together and live in a rundown house in Phoenix, Arizona.
Wow. Well, you know, since you had some sort of connection with, you know, the, you know, investigators, you know, and that kind of stuff, are you part of the police force or the DA's office? Or you guys have?
Oh, no, I'm not contracted with any of them. I'm more of a, so, like, if you needed, like, a medium reading, that kind of thing. So it's just, like, I do on the sides to either help families, more so just help families with either a missing person or homicide to try to find the murder and you know, share it with the family that way. But I'm not contracted by any of law enforcement or anything.
And have you been able to help people?
I have, before all this went down with my daughter, I have, because it's just, you have to have a real clear mind
mm-hmm.
and not let your own
mm-hmm.
your own self kind of get in the way of that. So I wouldn't
mm-hmm.
really want to pick up a case just because I don't think that's fair, because my mind's not very clear.
Right.
Right now.
Right. And is your uncle, has he ever been contracted with anybody in law enforcement?
No. He just helped me with the metaphysical shop, and it's just something he enjoys doing, in that he's actually developing a database for companies that do, like, drug and alcohol, like DUI programs and stuff. He's creating a database for that, because he was a manager before COVID shut down this company. So he developed his own database and stuff for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. You know, I was watching stalking prevention. They're on Facebook, and they had a Zoom today and last week on stalking. And, you know, the woman was saying, because I was stalked and harassed, and still am, unfortunately. And she was talking about how amazing it would be if there'd be one system, you know, across the state for every offense, or every, you know, a way to track phony numbers, or one system for everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, unfortunately, my ex left the state, And so there could be warrants upon warrants, but nobody's going to get him. He hasn't killed
right.
me. You know?
Right.
So, you know, if you had one system, you know, it'd be so much easier to catch criminals or,
mm-hmm.
you know, things for, you know, things that would pop up wherever they went. And, you know, it's we live in such a broken world, such a broken system. And every day when I wake up and I see another story, another something or another post, it just eats at me because we're living in the United States of America. Why is this
mm-hmm.
happening? Why are children being used to pawns? You know, why don't they see, you know, that there's so much corruption in the system? Why can't you believe that maybe the mom is telling the truth? You know?
Right.
I mean, it seems like every time abuse is brought up, especially sexual abuse, is brought up from the mom about her child against her husband or ex-husband, they automatically give the child to the abuser. Like,
right.
you know, what
right.
if? What if she's telling the truth? What are we doing?
Yep.
Why are we doing this? There's no rhyme or rhythm. It's just unbelievable.
Yep.
I'm going to give out our phone number again at 516-531-9643, 516-531-9643. We have a good hour left to the show. We'd love to hear from you. We have a very amazing guest, Chelsea Curtis. And we need to get justice for Shay. We need to bring her home to her mom and the rest of her family and away from her abuser. I mean, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And there's no rhyme or rhythm. It doesn't make sense. There's no justification. There's no, you know, I think that if our authorities and our judges were held accountable, when the proof came out, there would be less.
Right. Well, one of the mom friends that I've been talking to, she brought up a really good point, you know, especially like with the sexual abuse, you know, like for me, for my case, for instance, yes, the sexual abuse was caused by the father, but really this should be in criminal court just because it's a family
mm-hmm.
member and it's the mom and dad separated. That doesn't really... It should not be in just family court. It's a criminal. He is a criminal. He has several felonies. In fact, it's like why is this kind of stuff keep going on in family court and not in a criminal court? I thought that was very, you know, like, yeah, why isn't it? I mean, molesting a child is a crime.
Why have you not tried that route?
I don't think in California it would fall under criminal court.
Well,
I'm not sure.
Well, you have the only way to really, put your stuff together is to really learn the laws.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, the statute of limitations, you know, when she did come to court and say, or she did come, you have recordings, or she did come to court and say, yes, he did do this to me. And you got to act fast because the more she's being brainwashed, the more she is going to go against you.
Right.
You know, so, you know, even if she was called to court now, she denied what she said prior, then they would say, well, were you lying?
Right.
You know, unfortunately, you know, and they would see there's something fishy going on. But, you know, it's very important to learn all the laws. You know, there are a lot of organizations out there that can guide you. I do see that we follow some of the same organizations, the Graham that will help you possibly guide you in the right direction. But once you know the laws personally and you study them and then compare it to the evidence that you have, I would request a new judge. I would say, look, or I would take it to the criminal court. You have nothing to lose at this point.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Yeah.
Why do I have custody of my children? Why am I remarried with three more children? And I'm assuming you're happily married. And my daughter's gone from me. Does that make sense? There's nothing that makes sense here.
Right.
No, nothing does. California is not a state that is in the dungeon. You know, there has to be laws there.
And even in my. Sorry.
What was that? I missed what you said. And even in.
Yeah, because even in my response in my last court hearing, I brought up a couple laws that they're actually not honoring. And that's another problem is there's laws and things in place to, you know, protect our children, but the judges aren't honoring them. They're, you know, just like the reunification therapy here, you're not supposed to use that in a, child custody hearing, and they are. That's exactly what they're doing. So it's just like I definitely agree to find a new judge. Like you said, I don't have anything to really lose at this point. It's just the trauma that comes with it. And, beating your head against
help?
The wall.
Are you getting help on your own? Like, are you getting help for yourself? Have you been able to get, you know, therapy or whatever?
Well, with my the schooling that I'm doing, we do like therapy sessions, and I have opened up about this and stuff. And actually, a couple other people that are students taking the class are actually MFTs themselves. So I do have, you know, a good circle as far as, you know, doing that or with that. It's just really hard because I'm trying to take care of the other kids as well, and providing for them.
Well, it's very important that you take care of you too, because if you're not in a good place, then it's very hard to be a parent. And
right, yeah.
You know, what saved me was group therapy, and that was right off the bat in the beginning. I went through domestic violence. And you know, my abuser I was with for 21 years. The only way that I was able to be there for my kids, and I relate to a lot of what you're talking about with trying to kill themselves and Baker Act and all that kind of stuff. And I was able to get them the proper help. So if you have a family that can help you more, or if you can get a good support system around you and be there to help you with the kids, and you get more help for yourself, and group therapy is amazing, especially when it's directly directed to domestic abuse or what you're dealing with. A lot of shelters will have group therapy. You could do Zoom therapy, group therapy. There's many different options out there that you should look into. And, you know, when you start to, you know, get into the mind frame of I'm okay, I'm gonna be okay, and through this, then you can be that fighter. And fight, but it's very important to have all those laws in front of you. You know, compare it to whatever information, legal
information that you have there with you, and you know, go from there as far as you know, fighting, because the fight is not over. And you want to get to this kid before she's, you know, as soon as possible. And starting high school is so difficult. And, you know, she may be getting help, but if it's, you know, the best line I ever heard was, "You're only sick as your secret." So if you're not being honest, or you're brainwashed and that's what you're sharing, then you're not being honest with your therapist. And it's not really her fault. You can't blame her.
Right. Yep.
So
I agree.
So basically, until that happens, you know, until she gets real help and deals with the trauma, then, you know, she can never really heal. And she's at that age where it's so important. It's such an important, you know, milestone in her life. And she needs her mom. And, you know, you seem to be doing a lot that, you know, whatever you can do, but there's always more. And it's about connecting with the right people, and, you know, really that's what it is. And, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. What was that?
No, I would love to hear more of, you know, what more stuff that you've done or tried or, you know.
Well, one of the things that, you know, that kind of, because I know it seems like I should just go back to court, which that's, you know, I'm going to. But my daughter has created, But she has created a page because people are stalking me. You know, after the stepmom actually tried to take me to small claims court for me to pay for their attorney fees, which, again, I don't have an attorney. I never have. I can't afford one. So she thought to take me to court for their attorney fees and my daughter's missed flight. Blah, blah. Well, it didn't work. So there was that, and then we had shortly after that, somebody had poured sugar into our gas tanks on all of our vehicles in our car, which I presume was the lady's, that is now the stepmom's friend who lived behind me. Her father owns the house. I don't think she lives there right now, but one of her baby daddies does. But anyhow, did that. So there's a lot of hate going on, and getting to my point where my daughter has created a account where it's basically just doing nothing but trash talking me, and saying how much she hates me, which is just not true. And I really feel it's driven by, you know, the stepmom and stuff, but it kind of really made me stop in my tracks because, again, by me going to court and opening up this, you know, at one point she's going to be talked to. And if this is how they have manipulated her mind, it's just like, I'm almost frozen. Like, I don't know. Like, I know deep down that I need to keep fighting because it's not in a safe place for her to be there, period. It just, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It
could
just
be
really
in a page. It can also be a face. It can also be a page that she's not even using. It's not even her.
And it was all in retaliation to me starting the page that I did where you met me on Justice
right.
for Shay. I did change
right.
the name just to kind of make it not
right.
so direct, but still, it was all out of retaliation. And even she recorded our phone calls when she called in, you know, mad and, you know, chewed me out. I mean, I didn't say anything wrong, but it's just crazy because her mental state, this is not what you do to a kid in this kind of, to a kid period, let alone a kid that has the struggle with mental health and killing herself and being ripped away from her family, that this is not healthy for her. which makes it even more concerning that they're allowing her, you know, and I say with quotations, to do this if it is her, and if it's not driven, you know, it is driven, I feel, by the stepmom and the father. You know, even her mental health is suffering big time. I mean, just from prior to her going there and all this, my husband's brother, I guess, had my daughter in his living room about 2 weeks ago. So she was 15 minutes away from me in California at my husband's brother's house. We had no idea. And you can only imagine what kind of war now this has started with the family. But I can't imagine what kind of mental thoughts go through my daughter's head, you know, like her siblings that she is very close to are 15 minutes down the road. You know, the brother that she was extremely close to that shares the same father is down the road. Her mom, like I just, her, I, you know, it's just, I can't imagine what kind of harm this is actually doing to her that's going to cause, you know, a lot of long-term effect on her.
You're saying that she was at your current husband's brother's house?
Yeah, the stepmom, I guess, befriended my sister-in-law, which we do not get along. We haven't got along for years. Mm. Over that page that I was telling you about that my daughter created. So I guess the stepmom was here for a wedding and just took my daughter, not her other kid, which is odd, nor the father, mm-hmm. To come down here. And
just to stick
Yeah, my daughter was there.
Just to stick it
what
to
was
you.
That?
That's it. Just to stick it
yep.
to you. Haha. She's near you and
yep.
you can't even see her. And we're at your brother-in-law's house. That's so,
yep.
that is like so narcissistic and so cruel and evil. I mean.
Right. Exactly. And it's, I just, it really broke me because not only my daughter, you know, I cry all the time as I'm sure many of us do.
Mm-hmm.
To know my daughter was 15 minutes away and I couldn't even see her, or more importantly, just take me out of the equation and her see her siblings. I mean, even if the brother would have asked my husband to take the kids so they could see their sister, I would have done it, even with me being here, you know, home, just so she can
does
see them.
Does your husband get along with his brother? Could he have taken them over?
Not this particular brother. I mean, they didn't necessarily, the brother's wife has really messed up the family even before I was in the picture. So there's a lot of
drama.
What
yeah.
is it? Right. Yeah, it was
there's
just,
always somebody.
Mm-hmm.
There's always someone.
Yeah.
It's so horrible.
It's just, but again, it's like, do these judges not realize, you know, it's not that they don't, they don't know, maybe they do know the long-term effects they have on these children by doing this.
They don't care. There's,
right.
There's this inside rule, basically, because I've
mm-hmm.
seen this happen. The first time I saw this happen was when I was young, very young. With a family that I grew up with, and two sisters married two brothers, and one sister got divorced, and there was accusation of molestation, and this child was given to her father, or she lost custody of both of her kids, and I think she was given visitation or whatever, like, you know, watched visitation, but it was too painful. And she just walked away from all of it. And the family was never the same. The entire family was never the same. The sister had nothing
right.
to do with the rest of the family. Like one sister has nothing to, it's like the family divided, and none of the other siblings ever got married. And they're old, they're 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s. I mean, it's horrible, and these kids were raised by the other side, by the new wife and father, as if she never existed. And I think you know, I remember as a young girl hearing this and being like, "How could that happen?" And then I think back, this has been going on for decades.
Yep.
You know, you bring up sexual abuse against your ex, they automatically give the abuser custody. It's unbelievable.
Yep.
And what I always say is criminal court and family court have to be divided. And then you bring the criminal evidence into family court when you go through custody. Or you have outside people that have nothing to do with the case, psychologists, forensics, everybody, CPS, whoever, outsiders that have nothing to do with the case, watching the dynamic. And they have to be involved in the decision-making. Because when there's so much, too much personal stuff going on there, the decisions that are made are horrific, criminal, and who gets hurt in the end?
Right.
It's not just her, your daughter. It's her siblings. What mm-hmm. how are they viewing the system? System failed them too. Failed you. Failed
exactly.
them. Failed their their siblings. I mean, what are we teaching them? Especially if they understand it, and you know it has to be very frustrating for your older son to see this happen.
Yeah.
It's
and
very,
and
very
you know they see me crying. I mean, they even what gets me and you know what really just pisses me off beyond words is that my daughter spoke up and bravely stated to the court, bravely stated to the minors council, to the hospital staff. She tried so hard to get them to listen because again they didn't listen at 4 and 7 because she didn't talk. But now she's wanting to talk, and they are muting her. And that is what, you know, yes, the court never listened to me, and that is horrible in itself and took her away from me. But then you have a child or a teenager, she's 13, you know, speaking up for herself. And I told her, you know, how proud I am of using her voice. I provided that safe space for her that she felt that she can open up and fight this herself, or, you know, with me helping her. And they still chose to shut her down. And I can't imagine, like, how that's going to, you know, affect her. Again, another thing that's going to affect her.
Right.
She's never going to speak up again.
Right. It's easier to just go with the flow of being angry
right.
and the brainwash and manipulation, you know, it's not her fault. I mean, it is so intense and it's so, I mean, I lived it for so long myself, you know, that you start to believe your abuser is, you know, is God, you know, you start to believe that they, you know, and they could do no wrong or whatever. It's very difficult to, you know, because you're so mind controlled. It's literally almost like a cult.
Right.
That you can't even blame her, because she's a baby, she's a child, and
you know
sometimes it's easier to be angry, express your anger, and usually the anger is expressed at the healthy parent, the stable parent, directed. Even my children that live with me, I'm their punching bag, and not physically, but because I'm the stable parent that they don't have anything to do with their father, and that's their choice. Well, the youngest I have custody of, but I've asked him, you know, he's big enough. You know, they can call him if they want. I wouldn't even know. You know.
Right.
But they're older, much older, they're older than your daughter, and they witnessed plenty. So and you know, when kids witness abuse, they're abused. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, my oldest, who was, you know, with me the entire time, was going through a bad stage and just needed some sort of father figure attention and reached out. And he took that chance. He knew the,
mm-hmm.
the best way to hurt me was through my kids. And
yep.
he is using
yep.
that, using that tool. But I always say, you know, I always say that God has a plan. And, you know, I believe in God. I have faith. And that's what gets me
right.
each day, each and every day. Because, like you said, the memories pop up. And I'm sure you've seen some of my posts.
Mm-hmm.
I save them. You know, I snapshot them. So one day I can show him when he does, God willing, come back to me. You know, I feel like his father is the messenger right now to help him find his path to me. But again, our situations are different. Your daughter's a minor. You know, my son is not. He's making his own choices now. So, you know, the message I want to get out here is that we have to know and we have to learn every law
right
out there. And then we have to go and fight for laws to be changed. And you know what? I would talk to an attorney and I would just get some advice or talk to a victim's advocate and get some advice on how to proceed. Get some legal advice on how to proceed. Should I take this to criminal court? Here's proof, you know, because now she's coming back at you because she's scared or because she's stuck in this situation and she's brainwashed. So
right, exactly.
You know, you do have roots that you can take. You just need a little guidance, I think.
Right. Yeah.
In which route to take it, and it, you know, it's good you have, you know, a husband, and I'm assuming some family that is supportive, and you know, your daughter's of an age that she needs to have her mom. You know,
right?
And
I agree. So, and it's interesting because, you know, my daughter was at her best friend's house. COVID had, you know, was broke out, and you know they were doing
mm-hmm.
like the online schooling and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
she wanted to spend some time at her best friend's house. I said, sure. You know, it's not your guys' fault about COVID. So she was at her best friend's house, and she was telling the friend that she was, you know, thinking of her dad and stuff, and the best friend's mom said, oh, you should look him up on, you know, Facebook. So she ended up finding the stepmom, but I get it thrown in my face, mostly, you know, from time to time, not often, but like, well, if he molested her, why would she want to have contact with him? And it's like, you know, even like what you said about your son reaching out to him, whether
mm-hmm.
he's a minor or not, is just an, you know, I never had my biological father was never in my life. He was in and out for a little bit. And, you know, I always thought I wanted a relationship with him. When I was single in that apartment, I explained my father moved from Michigan to California, to work in some warehouse. And I could not believe who he was. Was awful. You know, I kicked him out and he wished death upon me because I'm not going to
mm-hmm.
tolerate that crap. But it's like, as a person, you know, I think it's very normal for these kids, whether they're abused or not, if the father or a parent is gone, to wonder what that kind of relationship would be like.
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, some people just don't understand it. They think that, oh, well, he molested her, so she should not have anything to do with him, which that's not necessarily how it works.
Right. Well, really, nobody gets to judge because they're not in your shoes. And
right,
I always
exactly.
say, unless you've walked that path in some way or another, and you have the pain of missing a child, don't ever judge or don't ever tell them, get over it. It's been a long time. Move on. They'll come back
yeah.
to you. Never, ever, ever say those words.
Exactly.
To,
yep.
to a
I
mom.
I totally agree.
And,
I totally agree.
What's mind-boggling is, and it's incredible, I mean, is that you have your other children. And if you're that horrific of a mom, then, you know, and you have, you're remarried, and I'm assuming you're in a healthy relationship. You have three more children, and there's no issues.
Right,
so
exactly.
What is it exactly? What exactly is the problem? Like, what made
exactly.
that? Who was that judge to make those decisions? Because a little girl was scared to talk? I mean,
right.
It's mind-boggling. And
it
you
is.
Know,
and as if the father was so concerned, which I say this in my recording that's on, you know, the page, as if the father was, if I was such a horrible mom and the father was so concerned about his daughter, why didn't he fight for all three of his kids? Why is he only wanting the daughter who he molested? Why is he obsessed with her? Like, this is sick.
Right. You know, the system is so broken. It's, I mean, I see it every day. I see it every day, hear it in all my shows. And, you know, it's so sad. It's so sad. And high school is such an important age for kids to have both parents, especially, you know, if they can have, you know, a healthy dad in their life, they a girl needs her mom, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I wish my kids can have both parents in their lives. I wish they're boys,
mm-hmm.
you know. My youngest is a tough cookie, and from a very young age, he made his decision. You messed with me. You screwed up our family. You hurt my mom. I want nothing to do with you. And
mm-hmm.
His father can write whatever he wants. She alienated me. No, you left the family. You left the state. And
right. Yep.
You walked away. And it's like,
exactly.
You know, that's on you. And this kid is a big boy. And he had to grow up very, very quick. And he had
mm-hmm.
to deal with a lot of pain. And, you know, he's coming into his own. You know, he's maturing, and he's, you know, I'm proud of him because, you know, he's making good choices right now. And it's not always easy. I've been a single mom for 6 years, and I was a single mom for three boys up until last year when one left. And
mm-hmm.
I had my challenges. I had to deal with mental breakdowns. I had to deal with one kid having cancer. I dealt with everything myself. I mean, I have good family. I have a good support system. But, and those are very important things. And taking care
right.
of yourself is very, very important. And that's, you know, the saying is, you know, when you're on a plane, you put the oxygen on yourself first before you put it on your children. That's how you have to look at life. The only
yeah,
way I can
yeah.
be a healthy, good, stable mom, continue to be a good, healthy, stable mom and get through this, is work on me, too, besides fighting. I don't want to ever see you give up that fight, and you just have to choose which route you are going to take.
Right, exactly.
In the fight. So, you know, it's very sad. It's a very sad situation. I'm going to give out our number again. I'm surprised nobody's called in. 516-531-9643. We'd love to hear from you, 516-531-9643. We have about another 30 minutes, but, you know, I'm okay if you, you know, don't want to talk much more. We can cut the show short a little bit tonight. It's up to you if you have more to talk about in the next 30 minutes. We can keep going. Feel free to, you know, whatever you'd like, whatever messages you'd like to get out there, whatever, you know, help. You know, you can give out your Instagram page. Yeah, go.
What was that? Sorry.
No. If you're looking for certain help, you can give out your Instagram information. Maybe somebody will reach out to you. Ooh, sorry. And maybe somebody will reach out to you.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. My Instagram account, I haven't made a Facebook account for it, but it is for my sharing my daughter and you know, sharing the stories is Weeping, like the, W-E-E-P-I-N-G, Buffalo, regular spelling. That's the Instagram, or my personal account is Chelsea Danae, which is on Facebook and Instagram. I am not on Twitter or anything. If anybody has suggestions or anything, you know, I'm open to all of it. And I was talking to another mom, and I thought she had another good idea about, you know, with us coming together, you know, us parents. It makes it so hard to kind of really just wipe it out, like in one big force of us, you know, coming together of what happened to our children, is because each state has different laws, you know, with like the family or family court and when it comes to our children, that it would be so much easier if it was, you know, which I know there are some laws that are, you know, across the state, but more of similar laws across the states and everything, because I just think it would really give us the benefit to, you know, shut this stuff down a little bit easier, because like I noticed some people are calling like for here a minor's counsel like a gal or like a guardian,
right.
You know,
yeah.
And for me, the minor's counsel has been the biggest problem in my whole case.
They're very dangerous. They're very dangerous.
Yes. And I wish, and again, this is another reason why I share this, and I even told my daughter during one of our calls when she had called me to chew me out, was that I'm sharing this for awareness, because if I would have known this, you know, I would not have okayed the judge to even assign a minor's counsel.
They're called guardian in litem. And they're very dangerous unless they are, you know, real professionals, well paid, and they are not court, given from the court system. You know, they're not going to go against the judge. And that's why I always say it has to be people that are from outside that are brought in and watching the whole case and the whole scenario and putting all the pieces together, and have nothing to do with either party or the judge, that comes in and watches the case, and they help make the decision.
Right.
Unless our judges they have to start getting trained properly, because they're destroying lives. They are destroying hundreds of lives.
Yeah, and this minor's counsel, she used to be just a bankruptcy attorney. She has no background in child development or child trauma or anything related to a child. I don't know if she has children, but still that doesn't necessarily give you the expertise that you need, especially dealing with these kind of cases. And I just find it ridiculous that somebody with no, like what you're saying, training, no backgrounds in any of this kind of stuff, can make such a big decision on our children's lives. Like, that is not okay.
Greed, 100 million percent. I mean, it has to end. And it has to end way before it starts, you know. This can't keep going on. And
no, it can't, because
happening.
If you think about it, you know, our children can possibly have children. And what happens if they split up from there and they're in the court system again, and it's happening to now our grandchildren, or, you know, it's just a long...
It's a vicious cycle. It's a very vicious cycle. And
it's horrible. I don't, you know, like my sister started going to court to divorce her husband, and I said, don't. You know, it's just get your kids and run, because he was you know what she was saying, abusing them. And it's just like, don't go to court. Just take your kids and go. I mean, if I could, I would. I would have done it completely differently.
Yeah, but then there'd be a bounty on you, or they'd say you kidnapped your kids or something.
Yeah, yeah. There would always be some other kind of problem, too.
Yeah. She needs whether it's somebody that's an advocate, victim's advocate, or somebody that there are new laws that have come out under Jen. I think California is one of the states. Maybe they didn't implement it yet, but there are a lot of you have to keep researching, because you can find loopholes. I would definitely go back to court in some way or another. You just have to get the right advice on which way to go about it.
Right.
You know, that's my advice to you.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm going to look into that.
Yeah. And maybe your Instagram for right now, make it private. I know
which
it's horrible.
One? The one for Shay?
Yeah. Because sometimes you don't want to give them ammunition. And somebody's fueling her fire. You know what I'm saying? It's not coming from her.
Exactly.
It's coming from her anger that she's been taught, you know?
And that's kind of why I took down some posts, like with the Minors Council, you know, the sex trafficking, and kind of just changed the energy of it to more of us loving and missing Shaylin and more of the happier times. Because if she is looking at that, you know, I want her to be reminded of that and not just the negative crap that we're unfortunately in. You know, so that's why the page is a little bit different than what it was when I first started, because it's like, I'm not at war with my daughter by any means. And that's what it was feeling like, because of the way that the people were letting her, you know, attack me. And it's like, I'm not fighting my daughter. I'm fighting the system that has screwed us, many of us, over, and bringing awareness, because there are moms out there that could use the knowledge of our experience and what we've dealt with. And then hopefully by, you know, this, we can make a change. And I think it's slowly coming together.
Right. 100%, 100%. And it's about the unity of our voices coming as one and advocating for each other, which is what my show is about. And, you know, just I actually invited you to some of the groups I belong to on Facebook, a group.
Oh, did you? Okay. I'll have to look. I don't know why I'm not getting many notifications. Just like even you tagging me, I didn't even see the tag. I just saw it on the wall.
It could be your settings. Check your settings. You want to keep yourself private, like as far as you know, who people can see, what people could see. Like I have all my friends on private, unless we have mutual friends. My posts and everything, only my friends or people that are tagged can see. You just go through all the settings, the privacy settings, and be careful who you accept as friendships. But when you go into a group, request your friendship, they can't see your private stuff. So, but it's probably because of your settings. That's why you can't see things. So once you undo those things, like where friends can tag you, you'll be able to see the groups I invited you to, and then you can accept. They may have you go through a thing, but probably not because I invited you and these people already. Most of them know me. Or a lot of the people in the groups know me. And there is a huge support system. Like I said, I'm surprised we didn't get any callers tonight because a lot of people sent me messages that this is very dear to their heart, this topic. You know, I have a lot of people that do their own podcasts. So they're busy with that or other obligations. And, you know, but this show will be listened to. And, you know, people will, you know, you reach out to people, people will reach out to you. Like I said, once you become part of the family, there is huge support. And you know, maybe you'll get the advice that way that you need.
Right.
At least maybe they could lead you into the right direction. But you know, you don't give up. Never. My show's called Never Give Up. Never Give Up, and Never Surrender.
Yeah, I love that
because you know, we need to bring Shay home and we need to get her the proper help. And, you know, she has her whole life ahead of her and she does have the chance to get better and healthy. She does, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah,
go on.
Oh, I was going to, part of the, schooling that I'm doing is, you know, it's a different kind of therapy, but, you know, part of it was why I was interested in taking this kind of stuff was because to help her, this was before, you know, she went with him, but just to kind of help, in a hypnosis kind of therapy setting, because it can really help with the trauma and digging down into the areas that, you know, that people and, you know, children block out. But there is a lot of hope for these things, you know, to help people get through this trauma, you know. So she does have a big life ahead of her, and you know, I like you're saying about, you know, trusting God and the path, and somehow, some way, you know, trying to make some kind of sense out of, you know, this crappy situation. I do agree to that as well.
1,000,000%. I mean, the only way to get through each day that's so painful is to is just looking up at God and saying, "This is in your hands." And you know, and like I said, it's also part of your healing process, because until you get to a healthy point, There's no way to fight if you're not in a healthy place. You'll never fully be in a healthy place until that young girl is back in your arms and she's getting her own help. But like I said, don't wait to get yourself more and more help. The more help you get, the more people you meet, that have walked your shoes, the more advice you'll get. I mean, there's such a tremendous amount of there's so much out there to be given and shared and learn, you know, and just you have to, you know, there's so many amazing people out there, and there are more opportunities for you to share your story. You know, this is considered parental alienation. There is so mm-hmm. many groups on this, so many amazing people that I deal with. I just tagged you on that in somebody's post. He may have advice for you. There's a tremendous amount of people out there. It's a matter of matching up with the right people and getting the right advice in which direction to go. And, you know, there are groups that are safe where you can, because they monitor who they bring on, that you can share and get advice. And, you know, you need a support system.
And I'm thankful for the the ladies like you that that I have met, because if I never started that the Justice for Shay page, I mean, I would never have met this community that I have. And you know, it's been life saving, because there's just to deal with this by yourself, you just can't. You can't do it.
No.
I would love to meet more people and you know, get more advice and share ideas and, you know, really dive headfirst into, you know, being part of it.
I'm gonna hook you up with a few different people. Maybe they'll have you on their shows. Some of them would normally call in. Like I said, other people, they have other podcasts and, you know, they're doing their own thing sometimes. But the more you speak about it, the more you get your voice out there heard, the more open you are to, you know, getting advice and hearing other people's stories. You're not alone. You are not alone.
Right.
And it's sad, but it's also comforting, I guess. It's a horrible thing to say, but you are not alone, and everybody's in it to fight, and you know, we're never going to give up. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep using our voice, and it's healing, you know, when you have a group of people that you're helping or are helping you. And, you know, for me, doing a show, I always say if I could reach one person out of each show, and I have. And you know, that's what it's about. You know, I didn't have so much in the beginning of an online support until I started opening up my mouth. And let's just say when I started opening up my mouth and advocating for my child, I created so much family. So I have my LinkedIn family. I have my Facebook family, my Instagram family. And the support I get from them I'm blessed. I have a great family, and they were there for me, and I have lifelong friends that have been there for me. I didn't have a community, unfortunately, that was there for me. I had a spiritual leader that was there to some point. But in 6 years, it's become so much of a taboo topic, or whatever you want to call it. There's so many voices out there, and so many people advocating for change, and laws are being, it's a slow process, but I could tell you in just 6 years, we've come so far. And this is what keeps all of us going.
whether we're in the midst of pain, we have moments of pain, we've moved on. I haven't, but, you know,
right.
Some people are blessed to trust and be able to move on to another partner. I wish I could. It's very difficult.
Right.
You know, I still have my same therapist. You know, I'll message her, hey, Karina, I need a Karina time. I met her in group therapy. She was interning at group therapy when I was going to a shelter for group therapy at the time. And actually, I have an appointment with her tomorrow. She had an opening and she put me in, you know, 6 years later, and she's seen me at my worst, and she's seen me grown. And those are the people that help you get through all these challenges. And it's not necessarily always have to be a therapist. It could be a friend that's dealing with it. It could be groups, online groups, you know, whatever setting you can find where people get you, feel your pain, walking your shoes, been there, can give you advice, lead you in the right direction. And that's what my show's all about. And that's what the advocating is all about. And that's what the support system is all about. That's just what it's about, you know? And journaling is a great thing. You're blogging, which is, but you know, I wish I would have journaled more. I wasn't, you know, I started journaling more at moments. You know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's
so
kind of how it is.
To go
with
back
me too, and then comes and spurts.
I have to go back and start digging and trying to remember things, because we block things out to protect ourselves. So, you know. So, anything else you'd like to share?
No. No. I agree. You know, with the whole community thing. And you know, I've always been this truth seeker and sayer, and it's kind of just always been my whole life, you know, in and out therapy myself since I was like 11 years old, because my mom died when I was young, and she was a drug addict. So my grandma had me in therapy, but I've always had some therapists say that I'm just too truthful, which I never understood. You know, how can you be too truthful? But, you know, I'm just glad that I, to myself, because, you know, it this October will be 1 year since this happened. And, you know, I've always felt the need to keep speaking out about it. So I'm really just thankful I did, because if I didn't, you know, I wouldn't have met you and the other moms. And, you know, that's how change is made, is by speaking out and, you know, making actions out of it.
Absolutely. And we're not just talking the talk. We're talking and we're doing. And,
exactly.
And that's your job now, is get to a healthy point where you can function and fight at the same time. And then get the proper advice on which direction to go with all this. And because, you know, you have nothing to lose, especially with the proof that you have. You know, a daughter belongs with her mom, especially if her mom is healthy, and she does not belong with her with an abuser. And that judge is a criminal. And he belongs in jail. And that's the fight we're fighting, is for justice, you know, and the wrong people are being punished. And in the end, the one that's punished the most is the child, the innocent child who needs the proper help and needs to get better and out of the grips of narcissistic, sick abusers and brainwashers and manipulators and controllers, and back home with her siblings, the people that really truly love her unconditionally.
Yeah.
And
that's the message we want people, you know, to hear. And, you know, it's a very impressive that with all your pain, with trying to fight, you're in school, working on degrees, you know, that's incredible. Working, you know, still functioning as a mom to 5 kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're incredible. You're incredible.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. You know, sometimes you just need to look at the things, the good things you have in your life. You know, I always felt blessed. I had my boys around. It was hell, especially during COVID time. And, you know, I always was the kind of person where I just did what I had to do. I multitask in 10 different directions just to do what I had to do for my kids. And,
exactly.
You know, took my pain, dealt with it behind closed doors and kept going, kept chugging along, you know. And I feel sometimes, you know, maybe I complain too much. Maybe that's why he's not here, you know, maybe. And then I say to myself, this is a God's plan. He has a plan. And, you know, and the more positive I'm positive and I focus on the positive, the more I feel the good energy. And
yes.
I feel more, you know, a little bit less at pain and more positive. Now it's hard.
Yes.
You know, we're going to always have those moments. But
with those moments, it still has a positive outcome because we have to have these little, you know, moments, you know, where we're either crying or feel like shit or just feel like we can't cope or go on. But in those moments, it's where we realize our strength to keep moving forward in a positive, you know, way. You know, I think it's so important, and that even with my situation, it's like it's so hard to, but by me sharing, you know, the happy times, just like my post today with her smiling, it just brings me so much joy because she was loved. I was not this person that this other party wants to make me out to be, you know. I believe in the power of positivity.
I wouldn't even pay attention to it. You know, I would focus directly on this kid and just on her needs and your needs and trying to figure out which direction to fight and getting the proper advice. And I think that's really what you need is really just, you know, going in that direction with the positive attitude and, you know, feel that pain, let it come out in those posts of memories. And if you want to start, if you want to write what you've been through, do it in the groups that are meant for that, where it's private. And, you know, but the most important thing is to get yourself a victim's advocate somehow through an organization. There has to be in California places that can help you. And there has to be laws that are in your favor that will help you and lead you back to the direction of getting Shay home and fighting for justice. And the first thing I would do is, you know, like I said, find a victim's advocate support group and find what kind of counsel you need. Which direction to take this? That's my advice. Now, I think that joining some of the groups I tagged you in would be very helpful because you have all kinds of people in there that have more experience with your situation. So many. And that definitely give you some more of direction in this. And more guidance,
then I can, you know, I speak from my own personal experience and what I've learned.
Right.
In 6 years. And the laws that I read up on. Any words or anything you'd like to say as we close out the show?
No, I just appreciate the platform to come on here and, you know, share some of my story. And, you know, I definitely am very grateful for that.
Well, I am thankful that you came on, that you agreed to come on. That's very brave of you. It is painful. But through pain, we learn, we meet others. And from this, you'll meet plenty of people, I have no doubt. And I will try and steer you in certain directions of parental alienation people that are out there helping others, that have walked your shoes. And I want to thank our guest, Chelsea Curtis, for being on the show tonight. Whoever's listening, whoever will be listening, let's bring Shay home. Justice for Shay. She needs to be home with her mom. And if you want to give out your Instagram page where they can message you or your Facebook page.
Yeah,
you
it's
say it
Weeping Buffalo, all spelt normal, on Instagram. Or my personal is Chelsea Danae on Facebook and Instagram. And it's spelt C-H-E. L-S-I-E, and Danae is D-E-N-E-E.
Well, thank you, Chelsea, again, for being here tonight. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
I'm going to pray for you, and I'm going to get you in touch with some people who can also help you use your voice, where you'll have other people listening. And we're going to keep going. We're going to keep fighting. We're never going to give up. And
yeah,
thank you
absolutely.
Again. Thank you
yeah,
again
thank
so,
you
much
so much
for being here. And we'll
yeah,
be in
have
touch.
A good night.
You
yes,
too.
Absolutely.
I want to thank Joe Koch for giving me this Blog Talk Radio time. Charlie for helping me 26 shows ago get this show going, up and running. To my listeners out there, please feel free to reach out to Chelsea and give her any advice you can think of. We need to bring justice for Shay and bring Shay home ASAP. This girl needs the proper help. She needs to be with her mom and her siblings that love her and care about her. And I want to wish everybody a wonderful night and a great rest of your week. God bless.
Perseverance, you can get things done. Sight of blind adherence that has conquered some. And nobody wants to know you're not. And nobody wants to show you how. You can see.